This program is a presentation of UCTV for educational and non-commercial use only.
Good evening, and welcome to UCSD Guestbook. I'm Wayne Cornelius, the director of the Center for U.S.-Mexican Studies and the Center for Comparative Immigration Studies here at UC San Diego. My guest tonight is Yana Shadak Hernandez of the American Friends Service Committee. She is the co-producer of a just-completed documentary film entitled Echando Raíces, or Taking Root, on the recent immigrant experience in America. Welcome, Yana. Tell me some more about this project. Why did you make this film?
I work for the American Friends Service Committee, which is an organization, international nonprofit organization based in the Quaker faith. And this project actually stems from a long tradition of work in immigrant communities that we have worked with. There are 16 actually immigrant rights programs that the FSC has worked with and sponsored over many years, and this project stems from their work and their concern for the human rights of immigrants, the rights of immigrants in their constituencies. And so this developed actually as a concept that visually talking about the lives and stories of immigrants is important. And we really felt that a documentary, not in the traditional sense of a documentary perhaps for TV only, but as an educational tool, as an open-ended resource for community organizers, for educators, for university classrooms, union halls, and other sectors where communities come together to speak about particular issues. And often finding that when we were building alliances or trying to broaden our constituency base, that immigration is a question that is confusing. People don't often understand the issues and the underlying issues, and more often than not, do not hear the stories of the immigrants themselves. So the focus has really been on telling those stories and letting the stories of immigrants come forth in this video. And so it's divided into three sections. The first is regarding the Central Valley, which we'll be seeing. Then there's a Houston section, urban migration, and the third being around Iowa and the meatpacking industry. And it is a three segments, which can be divided into three individual educational pieces. There will be a discussion guide with it for educators and community organizers to use as a guide, but also we'll have immigration issues papers to fully enter into the discussion around immigration and more in depth. And so that was really the essence of how the project came about. We worked with a wonderful filmmaker from New York, from Third World's Newsreel, J.T. Tagaki, who's the director, and I myself with others co-produced this film. And it comes from really working directly in the communities. And the AFSC was able to actually get these stories because we've been working in those communities for many years. So we at the AFSC have had a project of really focusing on the issues of human rights, and that all peoples here in the United States have the right to respect and dignity, and therefore often have questioned some of the immigration policies that exist, and that will come out in the and those are some of the things there. But also,
how do you get people who may be in the country illegally to talk freely in this kind of a project?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, and we certainly ask people about being filmed and getting their consent and understanding the issues fully of a film. Most people that you'll see in the clips today have been organizing in their communities to some level, or organized back in their communities in Mexico, Guatemala, or Southeast Asia, and so they've had an experience of actually understanding the importance of working in community, working on community issues, and thought that this was important, that this their stories needed to be told and what were part of this. All of the communities were actually got to see the video. We had community screenings before it was ever finished. And along with experts and people in the different sectors that we address, labor, academics, community folks. So that it certainly is a concern. And undocumented immigrants generally are fearful of talking about their stories precisely because of the precarious situation that they live in. But because often situations become so dire and so they see the impact on their communities, that the folks in our video have said, you know, this is our time to tell our stories and to speak out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any problems as an organization advocating for the rights of people who may be in the country illegally, especially in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks of 9/11?
We certainly, after 9/11, there was a great sort of moment of thinking that much of the work that we had been focusing on for legalization of undocumented immigrants and for other reforms in immigration law and policy were, you know, had been dashed because of what had happened. However, I do think we've really seen that there is an incredible need to look at all workers, families, men, women, and children who are here as human beings and as people who contribute to our society, contribute to our economy, contribute to our communities. And therefore, we have used that platform as the way to talk to church groups, to union organizers, to our politicians, and actually have gotten, since 9/11, after the initial sort of shock of everything that happened, people to return to their commitment for the rights of undocumented people here. So we have a growing mass of people in political positions, again, in our ranks.
Well, let's take a look at some clips from your film, beginning with the segment on California's Central Valley.
Yo ya venía contratado, pero muchos compañeros han cruzado de mojados. Ahora que ya estoy viejo.
Pues como bracero vine en 1943, llegamos, no yo solo, veníamos 700 u 800 personas.
My grandfather and my father, they've been working in the fields since they came to this country. They've been doing that for my grandfather approximately maybe 50 years. My father has been doing that for 35, 36 years.
Bueno, pues estamos en un lugar, un condado donde hay una presencia muy fuerte de latinos, como alrededor de 80,000 trabajadores del campo en todo el Valle de San Joaquín. Dentro de esto hay innumerables indígenas que pueden ser entre 30, 40 o 50 mil indígenas que son trabajadores del campo. Este trabajo no es por horas, es por contrato, posiblemente entre 15 a 20 centavos por cada tabla que vamos a ver más adelante. Bueno, la condición en México es peor, ¿no? Es de marginación, pobreza y miseria. La mayoría venimos por necesidad económica, ¿no? También tiene que ver política en el sentido de que, en mi caso, ¿verdad? Yo fui torturado por el gobierno local, perteneciendo al gobierno de México, y tiene que ver esa combinación.
Aquí pues nos dedicamos a trabajar en el campo, hacemos todo tipo de trabajo, ¿verdad? Cosechamos la uva. Trabajamos también en temporadas en el higo. Soy de Huixlahuaca, Oaxaca, y estoy aquí desde 1991. Pues yo en mi pueblo ya se habla el mixteco, ¿verdad? Mis padres son gente pobre, ¿verdad? Muy pobre, entonces por eso me vine. Pues, como muchas personas, ¿verdad? De contrabando, o sea, a escondidas con un coyote. Pues así, eso es lo que hacemos aquí, ¿no? Trabajar, porque puro trabajar, aquí nos llevamos la vida. Que cuando está la temporada de mucho trabajo, trabajamos hasta los domingos y no tenemos días, ¿verdad?, de descanso ni nada. Y pues todo con tal de ganar un poco de dinero, porque en el field pues es un sueldo mínimo. Tenemos que aprovechar lo más que se pueda las temporadas de trabajo.
But Central Valley, California is probably the richest agriculture producing area in the world, in the history of the world. But I think what's not known is that the opposite exists. You have this great wealth, but you also have the great poverty. Agriculture have a vested interest in having a labor force that doesn't know the system. They can't speak, and they're hidden. They're very invisible. People don't see them. When you're in a situation like this, it really can lead to exploitation.
What do you guys do during the day?
We go to school, do homework. We play.
And then what do your parents do?
They work. Then they come back and take a bath.
Where do they work at?
You have to cut the grape.
Yeah. And put it in the bucket. If you're finished with the bucket, then you throw it in the paper. Then you get to the bucket and you throw it in the paper.
Oh, my mom! No! Mommy!
Somos muchos de aquí, son la mayoría de personas que son de Mixteco. Venimos allá porque como nosotros somos pobres y no tenemos trabajo allá. Pues sí, lo que el problema es que hay aquí es por, están diciendo que hay problema aquí de, no sé, de aquí de aceite o que no sé qué es lo que tiraron aquí. Y eso puede afectar a nuestra familia, están diciendo, pero como nosotros no sabemos, estamos viviendo aquí.
This is how, almost exactly how they live.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like
He said that when they come and grow all this, it's not where you're so happy you wanted to do it. You do this so you could just take picture and just keep thinking you and Lao. So that's like day-to-day life.
We have Hmong, we have Lao, we have Vietnamese, and Cambodians, and Black, and Hispanic, and Caucasian. I don't think that we know much about them, because we all just new to this country and we try to face with a lot of challenges. We just know that Vietnamese and Hmong and Laos and is the people who escape from their country the same we do.
Like for me, you know, for example, I came from Cambodia. I escaped from Cambodia because of the war. We escaped during the nighttime. In the morning, you know, we see a lot of dead bodies laying on the street. Some like floating in the nearby stream or river. Coming to the United States, I was so happy, you know. I was so happy because I thought that United States may be like a, it's like a heaven.
Actually, we luckily that they did provide us with the public assistance. But unfortunately, something else they do not know that how can we find job? We know nothing, and we do not speak English. Where school we can go to? When I came here, I can see that discrimination, prejudice, and hatred, and some kind of resentful feeling from them when they see us. If you ask, Why Americans bring a lot of refugees from South Asia? Why they bomb, why they involved in Vietnam War and bomb Cambodia? Nobody know about it. If our United States government do not involve in bombing our country, I don't think that we're going to be here.
Sin embargo, podemos ver, por ejemplo, en el sureste asiático, donde las personas llegan como asilados políticos y reciben asistencia pública. Esto no lo podemos ver con los centroamericanos, y menos con los mexicanos, ¿no? Las guerras que hubieron en Centroamérica, muchas veces las personas que venían acá no lo reconocían como perseguidos políticos o no les daban asilo político porque el mismo gobierno estadounidense estaba financiando esas guerras y los gobiernos de Centroamérica pues no querían a la gente, entonces la gente venía, ¿verdad?
Vengo de Guatemala, salí de Guatemala desde el año 82. Por las guerras que hubo allá en Guatemala. La gente maya, pues, somos gentes muy humildes. Y pues no conocíamos ningún soldado en Guatemala. Y por eso cuando vimos llegar los soldados nos asustamos mucho nosotros. Ya en la mañana, el otro día, como las 2 de la mañana, es cuando entraron a sacar a mi esposo y aún mi cuñado. Rayaron ellos ahí en el campo, en el río de Potrero Morro, así se llama un río, que ya estaban todos torturados ellos. Tampoco no sabíamos que era tortura, ya hasta aquí lo venimos a saber que eso se llama tortura. Y entonces supimos que nos tenían odio, que porque nos acusaron que éramos guerrilleros, que porque somos indígenas. Y es por eso que salimos. Aquí en este país llegamos porque como ya habían varias personas que habían llegado ya de los refugiados, se habían venido para acá en California. O sea, aquí nos dedicamos al puro film. Los contratistas no entregan el total de cuánto hacemos cada día y es toditito el día el trabajo. Y duro, con la cuchilla ir piscando. Cuando salen los cheques, pues es muy poco. Tenemos miedo también al vivir en esta casa por las autoridades. Que sabemos que salubridad es la que más le tenemos miedo aquí, porque vivimos varias personas. Le digo a la gente que busque su renta para que no vivir muy estrechos, pero ellos buscan aquí, porque aquí es cara las rentas.
¿Para qué es importante después de la
licenciada? Yo soy la que estoy levantando una asociación de guatemaltecos aquí en Stockton y esto lo estoy haciendo para que nosotros nos salgamos ya un poco de esta vida que hemos tenido, tan dura pues. Luego les doy consejo a ellos cómo podemos vivir ya aquí, que platiquen un poco más, aquí nos enseñamos el español. Y eso es lo difícil, porque allá en Guatemala teníamos tanto miedo por la guerra. En México que no podíamos vivir porque no somos mexicanos, no tenemos los beneficios como ellos. Aquí nos estamos escondiendo, ya no es del ejército, ya es de la migración. Tenemos, esos son los problemas que hemos tenido más difíciles.
Particularmente yo, desde antes que llegara a este país, ya traía esa ganas de organizar. En 1984 llegué aquí, en el Valle, y empecé a organizar también. En Oaxaca es para luchar por justicia. En México, en Sinaloa o Baja California, es por derechos. Derechos de los trabajadores que son maltratados y engañados. Aquí también... las mismas condiciones nos han obligado a organizarnos, a luchar por un cambio, a tener un impacto en nuestra comunidad, ¿verdad? Los mixtecos somos un grupo de los 16 pueblos indígenas en Oaxaca que hablamos diferentes idiomas. Dentro de esta organización, el Frente Indígena, hay cuatro de nosotros: mixtecos, zapotecos, triquis y mijes. Somos muy fáciles por los propios contratistas mexicanos que engañan a nuestra gente porque saben que no hablamos bien el español.
Bueno, podemos hablar de hace 10 años, muchos de nosotros nos avergonzamos de decir que somos indígenas, porque había mucha discriminación, había mucho rechazo hacia nosotros, que somos ignorantes, que no tenemos educación, ¿verdad? Entonces, ahora hay un cambio de eso. Mucha de la gente nos sentimos orgullosos de ser indígenas porque ahí está nuestra identidad, nuestro idioma, nuestra cultura, ¿verdad?
Yo he empezado a participar con esos grupos, Frente Indígena, Oaxaqueño Binacional. Nosotros en nuestra cultura, pues las mujeres como que no todas, ¿verdad?, estamos impuestas a tener, a ser líderes, ¿verdad? Y ahora pues estoy con ellas, ¿verdad? Y todo lo que yo voy adquiriendo, esos conocimientos que yo voy recibiendo, se lo transmito a las personas que conozco, ¿verdad?
I am Hmong. We used to live in Long King in Laos. For almost 2 years, I've been working with the Hmong immigrant women. The reason I'm doing this because most of the Hmong women are so isolated. Always home, take care of a kid, and we get them the opportunity to meet and express themselves. Into the Hmong culture, women don't attend any kind of gathering. When we first started, and then the men asked me a lot of questions, saying, you know, what are you taking all our women? What do you do with them? And I have to tell them everything, because they wonder what they talk about. It's been going on pretty good. So there's more open, there's more trust. And we also combined with the Latino women, and that way we could talk about what some of the similarity between those two groups.
Pues antes de verdad de conocer o de tener la convivencia con las mujeres Hmong, pues en realidad yo ni siquiera me imaginaba, ¿verdad? Nada, o sea, simplemente como en este país vimos tantas personas de distintos lugares, entonces era nomás verlos y ya, o sea, nunca me ponía a pensar por qué ellos se venían a este país o si sus problemas con los nuestros coincidían, la manera de pensar, de vivir. Entonces también me ha ayudado a sentirme que no soy la única, ¿verdad?, que ha venido de tan lejos a este país, ¿no?, sino que hay tanta gente, que no solo los mexicanos venimos a este país, sino que hay de muchos otros lugares que, como los mexicanos, están aquí también, ¿verdad?, luchando pues, todos por un futuro mejor.
Yana, much of this segment has dealt with Guatemalans, who are now the second largest group of Latino immigrants in both San Diego and Los Angeles counties, second only to the Mexicans. But compared with the Mexicans, an even higher percentage of the Guatemalans are here illegally. Why is that?
Well, Wayne, as I know you rightfully know, that many of our immigration policies are affected also by our U.S. policies. And the policies that focused on particular Central American countries like Guatemala and El Salvador and those people fleeing from those countries did not receive the same kind of legal remedies or legal status as other people from, for example, Nicaragua, where our government actually was supporting the regimes there. So in essence, or for example, as in the video, in the context of Southeast Asian refugees, those folks received refugee status based on, although we were also politically involved there, but through conventions and so forth, were able to come to this country as refugees and receive particular benefits. That has been a very deep concern to the communities, Central American communities, and over the last decade and a half, they have been fighting for the right to permanent residency here in this country. And therefore, at this point, most Guatemalans, as you say, are still in a type of legal limbo and unable to adjust their status.
Your film also demonstrates that recent Latino immigrants are not nearly as quiescent as their predecessors. They're organizing themselves to defend their rights. Is that because today's newly arriving Latino immigrants are different from their predecessors, or is it because U.S. labor unions are finally reaching out to them?
That's a great question. I think it's a bit of both. We're seeing many people, as the Oaxacan organizer in the video, who is coming with an experience of being an organizer in his country of origin. He was an organizer in Oaxaca and had come here and felt that same commitment. Did that happen prior to this period? Yes, but I do think there are also other conditions that are allowing people to organize. One is the labor unions in 2000. The AFL made a very pronounced shift in its policy, which was greatly applauded from the immigrant rights movement, that they were going to support the rights of undocumented people. And
this wasn't just because of altruism.
No.
There was an element of self-interest involved.
Absolutely.
Here, right?
The self-interest is, of course, because their rank and file were predominantly consisted of undocumented people, workers, and therefore to the labor movement, of course, in the last years has been losing members, wanting to gain fuller membership in their unions, decided that they needed to make this critical shift in their policy. So that has also certainly helped workers and farm workers to organize. Yet I also think there have been other sectors, such as the legal community, particular groups, also academics. And like Isao in the film from the California Institute for Rural Studies, who have made an incredible contribution to also the thinking about labor rights, labor conditions, and they have also been activists at the same time that they've been academics. So,
Your film also shows that the two main immigrant groups in the Central Valley, the Latino immigrants and the Hmong refugees, are beginning to realize that they have some important interests in common. But are there also tensions between the two groups?
Yes, I think, you know, certainly all communities who are different have, there's some element of conflict. In the case of the Guatemalans and the Hmong, not receiving, having access to public assistance can be a point of conflict. I do think, though, most of the time, it's also about the access to public housing, for example, the scarcity of that access. And there are other factors that often get said that they're boiled down to a cultural issue, and that's too much of a simplistic issue. It's generally competing over access to specific things like housing or perhaps having benefits. But in general, we've seen that through this kind of dialogue and community interaction, different ethnic groups have been able to find much more commonalities in their immigration experience and their community experience versus the conflicts. It's having the opportunity to really find a space to have those discussions.
Could this really lead to some kind of cross-ethnic political coalition at some point?
I think that is absolutely something that a lot of people have been working towards, and in some cases there have been those kinds of instances, and we've seen that in particular instances for groups fighting for legal access to permanent residency and so forth. But I think there's a great opportunity there, so that's what a lot of this video is focused on, wanting those kinds of discussions to happen within the community, within our educational sectors and labor movements, because that's critical for our society to continue, but that it's becoming more and more diverse. We need to have that kind of coalition building.
Well, now we're going to move to the state of Iowa, which since the early 1990s has experienced a sudden influx of Latino immigrants, particularly in small and medium-sized cities.
Come be our guest.
Part of our population goal, we think, is reaching out
to new people and opening our hearts and opening our minds to new Iowans. We want people from not only other states, but we're talking about people from other lands.
Federal immigration authorities descended upon the Swift Pork plant Friday, arresting nearly two dozen suspected illegal aliens.
You'll find a place away from the hurried, stressful pace of your daily life, working 8 to 5, the city sights.
Perry is really a good community, a nice community. In 1996, population logged in at 7,244 people. The Hispanic population in the community was at somewhere between 13% and 14%. I know that with our school system, the population there, the Hispanic community, is nearing 30%.
This is the most change this town has ever seen, probably from the beginning. It's been, I mean, there's just, my yearbook has very little colorful faces in it. I mean, a foreign exchange student, maybe.
It was a nice little quiet community, but hey, things change.
Yo vivo aquí con otras tres personas de México. Yo soy guatemalteco y convivimos bien, nos llevamos bien. A ellos les gusta cocinar y cocina muy picante y tienen su familia, la cual pues tienen que mandarle su dinero para que esta persona pueda sostenerse en México. Y dos de ellos trabajan en TriVP. De parte del desempleo me dicen, me mandan una carta ofreciéndome un trabajo en el estado de Iowa y me ofrece, me dice, allá se te puede dar clases de inglés. Dice, allá te damos esas oportunidades.
Vengo de la Ciudad de México. Cuando yo decidí venir a los Estados Unidos, es que yo estaba pasando por un problema personal. Me estaba divorciando de mi esposo y pues en ningún momento anterior me había sentido con la necesidad de venir a los Estados Unidos. Yo en México tenía mi profesión, trabajé en educación especial, en educación para adultos, que yo hago ahí en IVP. Con un cuchillo les quitamos toda la carne de más que llevan. Los huecos de las patas se los cortamos.
Oh, I would say Perry has changed dramatically. When I was growing up, many people worked for the railroad, and many, many people worked for Oscar Mayer, a packing plant here in town.
Wages run from about $10 to about $14 an hour, depending on certain jobs you had. It was pretty good back in the 80s there.
You know, every driveway in town had a camper and a boat in it. You know, I mean, it was, people were living well.
Folks went about business as usual in downtown Perry today, despite yesterday's news that its largest employer would soon be closing its doors for good. Nearly 800 people work at the Oscar Mayer hog slaughtering plant, but February 3rd, they will be left without their jobs. About half of the Oscar Mayer employees live right here in Perry. Residents say they just can't believe the plant is closing.
Meatpacking probably at that time is probably the main thing of my life at that time. A guy kind of in a way felt like he was lost.
I would say that was a pretty traumatic thing to have happen to the community. They were very high, well-paying jobs, and it kind of set this community up on their expectations on work conditions and wages.
Iowa BP, when they had come to town in the 90s, they more or less just kind of took over, and if you wanted to work at Iowa BP, you started for less than wages. I'd say starting out pay at Iowa BP when they first started was $6.50 an hour, no matter what.
People around here didn't like the wages, didn't like the work conditions. It was just different than what they were used to, so in order to support a business like that, they had to recruit and bring in a workforce.
And eventually they started bringing Hispanics and stuff in to run the plant. I'd say the attitude at first was, you know, like the Lotino workers were taking our jobs.
I think that there was a bitterness that kind of you can definitely still feel among the retired people in town. And they were bitter about their own life, and they're bitter about the changes that have come to Perry. And so now here we are today, you know.
Para mí fue bastante difícil porque llegar a un lugar donde no conoces a nadie no fue realmente lo que ellos, la entrevista, no fue cierto porque el trabajo es muy pesado, el trabajo es bastante fuerte, la temperatura era muy alta, miraba caer 2-3 personas al piso por el calor, no se soportaba. No habían clases de inglés, no había un lugar donde a la gente se le pudiera un consejo qué hacer por los problemas que había.
Okay, I was with Iowa BP 4 years. The pace lines and all the production lines were sped up. The safety part of it, they went downhill quite a little because the pace lines were sped up.
Por el principio vienes con muchas ganas, con mucho entusiasmo y echas todas las ganas y todo el esfuerzo que tienes. Pero ya cuando pasan 6 meses, tú dices, oh, mis dedos me duelen. Todavía este dedo se me laquea en las mañanas. Todavía no tiene el movimiento que debe de tener porque es un trabajo muy repetitivo y muy fuerte.
El gancho estaba así. Entonces yo con ese gancho agarraba la carne, pero eran unas piezas que pesaban de 90 libras en adelante. Y eran unas piezas que estaban pasando cada minuto. Se me duermen estos dedos, estas dos partes. Se me duermen, de repente me agarran una tembladera de este dedo. Este dedo no lo puedo tener yo serio. Este dedo así me tiembla. Y hay veces que me tiembla más feo. No quedé bien con mi mano, yo no he recibido hasta ahorita ni un peso. Al contrario, he ido así a doctores aquí. Y pues creyendo que a ver si con la aseguranza que yo tenía de IDP, no, pues ya la cancelaron.
Y me molesta mucho al ver cómo explotan a la gente dentro de IDP. Si venimos para acá es porque venimos huyendo de nuestros problemas, catástrofes, por lo que viví en país, la guerra, andar huyendo, vivir aquí, escondido de migración, explotado, no saber inglés. No es fácil, es, no sé, me da un sentimiento de que, ¿será que la gente, un pueblo tiene que pasar por una guerra para aprender?
Federal immigration authorities descended upon the Swift Pork plant in Marshalltown on Friday. The raids are part of their overall efforts to fight illegal immigration.
I believe we've seen an influx of individuals, foreign nationals, coming to the state of Iowa simply because there is work available. We've always heard that some of these larger meatpacking companies are recruiting in Texas and other countries. This is our processing area. Everyone who we arrest is processed in this area. These are our cells. We have 2 cells, and each cell holds approximately 25 people. Every country has a right to say who can come in and who can't. I believe the United States is the best country in the whole wide world. And if I weren't here, you know, I'd probably want to come here.
Bueno, creo que a la comunidad anglosajona de aquí de Perry no le ha gustado mucho la idea de que ha llegado mucho hispano.
To be honest with the community, I don't think was prepared for that in a number of ways. In some ways, we're still not.
Yo pienso que es relativamente un poco tranquilo y tenso. Cuando yo entro a algunos lugares de aquí de Perry, tiendas, pues me siento libre de hacerlo, pero no me siento cómoda.
No ha sido mucha mi relación con los blancos, pero sí he encontrado gente que sí se presta a que uno tenga relación, contacto con ellos. Es un poco difícil.
If I believe in Jesus' teachings, I have to care about these people, and I do and will. But boy, we have some people in our congregation that it's just difficult.
There's not a ton of crossover. There's not a lot of interaction. The feeling that I get is not a negative feeling. It's just more of a there, we're here type of island atmosphere almost.
We have written this information up on a complaint and given it to the county attorney.
Escribieron esta información y se la dieron al del condado.
Quiere decir que ellos se lavan las manos y nomás avientan el papeleo al abogado del condado y ellos ya quedan limpios.
You folks were informed before, we're not sweeping you folks under the rug on the back shelf. This we're given the priority and we're still investigating, and when we find more, we're glad to let you folks know.
Un mexicano, el que hubiera hecho eso y un blanco lo hubiera visto, ya estuviera la armada, migración y, el ejército aquí.
That is not correct.
Yes, this is correct.
Last week, more than 11 vehicles got damaged by Americans. Three of them were my grandparents. That right there is $200. Obviously, some of them lost a day of job. They couldn't go to work. Everybody knows who did it, yet only three people have turned in themselves. A whole bunch of Hispanic people had to come down and tell the police, because the police hadn't done nothing about it. If this was done to racism, I am very sorry, because I also learned just yesterday that three of them happened to be in my class and were friends of mine, at least I thought.
Number one, I sympathize with you also. It came as a complete surprise to us also. I wish I could guarantee that it would not happen again, but I cannot control the actions of every individual in this city. I think the majority of the citizens of Ackley welcome you and would like you to feel at home here. But unfortunately, there are always some individuals that will not.
I would just like to say one thing. They mess with the Mexicans. We as Mexicans, we're going to become a full community as one, and we're going to fight it, and we're going to win it, and we're going to prove it.
If anything, we were thankful to the people around here for letting us be in here. But that sure has changed now, because obviously we're not welcome anymore.
Y alguien se dio cuenta, alguien llamó a la policía. ¿O?
Yo le llamé a la policía.
¿Sí?
Me prestó el teléfono el vecino.
¿El vecino?
Ajá.
Híjole.
Y pues le hablé a la policía y luego ya vinieron y... Pues nosotros correteamos al güero, pues.
¿Y lo cogió la policía?
Lo agarró la policía.
¿Qué, roció gasolina a él ahí o...?
Pues creo aparentemente le echó con un tanquecito de gas que traía.
Ajá.
Le echó allí y luego le prendió, por eso no se quemó así.
Ajá.
Y pues no conocemos a nadie, nada más que se molestó porque vinieron a recoger a mi amigo y pitaron. Y vino el güero de ahí enojado.
Porque... ¿Y tú cómo te sentiste, muchacho?
Pues
sí, mira.
Nosotros aquí teníamos como 15 días apenas que nos habíamos movido a vivir aquí.
Ajá.
Porque vivíamos allá para el field, pues no conocíamos a nadie. Pues no lo miran a uno como gente, como humano que es uno, porque pues Si uno hubiera ido allí a quemar en la casa, te aseguro que...
Oh, olvídate.
Problemas nos hubiéramos metido.
O si no hubiéramos... de cárcel y luego deportado.
Y si no hubiéramos estado aquí, pues imagínate el broncón que nos habían aventado si se hubiera quemado la casa. Sí, pues, sí. Nos hubieran metido a nosotros al bote. Si no, pues ustedes lo provocaron o dejaron algo prendido, qué sé yo, ¿verdad?
We arrested that individual and charged him with arson. Some time ago, Dora Seams, who's a Hispanic lady who lives in Perry here, works for the state of Iowa, received a letter from an unknown person directed to her that was really derogatory towards the Hispanic community.
Ella nombra mexicanos cochinos, que hemos venido a destruir este pueblo, la tranquilidad de este lugar, que por tantos años les ha costado, que vivimos como ratas, que tenemos hijos como ratas, que quieren que nos vayamos de Perry. Y entonces es una carta de odio en donde ahorita los latinos que se han dado cuenta de ella es que están despertando a la realidad, porque por 2, 3, 4, 5 años los que se han establecido en este lugar, que ya compraron su casa, que tienen sus 3, 4 años trabajando en IBP, pues estuvieron muy tranquilos. Ahora es que se están dando cuenta lo que realmente la gente de Perry, la nativa, gente nativa de este lugar, piensa de nosotros.
Yes, I would say that there is a problem with prejudice in Perry. Is it a huge problem? I don't know. There is nothing that I know of that I feel like city government should be doing, because the city cannot legislate that people love their neighbor.
Es lo que nosotros los latinos necesitamos, esa unidad de podernos ayudar unos a otros, de que ya el hecho de estar en un país diferente, el hecho de estar lejos de nuestras familias, el hecho de estar solos en un estado tan lejano como es Iowa, vaya, el unirnos como latinos entre nosotros mismos, yo creo que nos trae muchos beneficios, yo pienso.
Incluso, por ejemplo, creo que a mí en lo personal me ha ayudado mucho, porque me ha dado seguridad, me ha dado la fuerza también para poderme defender a veces.
Ya los cambios se están dando. Tenemos un comité de diversidad que hay gente blanca, hispanos, y tratamos los problemas. Aunque no se le pueden dar solución en el momento, pero seguimos haciendo actividades.
I think that the problem will dissipate some, but right now, people blame everything on the new people.
I feel in our low-paying jobs and stuff here in Iowa, the Latino workers are probably the ones that's going to take over these jobs and keep these jobs going in Iowa. I know, I think it's a trend that it'll probably get worse.
El IBP es el culpable, ¿no?, de que en este pueblo llegue gente latina, porque ellos se han encargado de irnos a traer desde lugares muy lejanos. So, IBP es el culpable. Ellos son los que han querido traer latinos a este lugar. ¿Y por qué? Porque la mano de obra es más barata, simple y sencillamente por eso. Porque este planeta Tierra... Dios lo hizo para nosotros. Nosotros hemos puesto las fronteras, pero la tierra no es de nadie, es de Dios. Y nosotros hemos puesto las fronteras. Pero cambien su mente, porque realmente este país se mueve por hispanos también.
Yana, the struggle that you depict in Perry, Iowa, at first glance seems to be a competition over the cultural character of the town. But there's also a tendency for longtime residents to blame Latino immigrants for the poor wages and working conditions offered by the town's largest employer. So what is really driving the public response to immigration in places like Perry? Is it culture or is it economics?
Wayne, those are questions that we've certainly, in many contexts,
struggled with, because I think it's a bit of both. In the context of Perry, when the Oscar Mayer plant left and Iowa BP came in, then people felt that they were left behind. But they also know that they're young people. Iowa natives, the young people, don't want to stay in Iowa. There are not economic opportunities that pay the kind of wages that they're hoping to receive. And so that certainly is a real issue. And it's often hard for people to understand sort of the dynamics of economic restructuring and how that industry has shifted and is seeking out a low paid labor force. On the other hand, there are cultural differences between these communities. There's obviously a language difference, and many people see that as a challenge. However, I think, and so the questions of difference come up, and this community, as the clip discusses, is struggling with trying to figure out how they're going to live together in a peaceful way, and it's not easy. And there are people who are hateful and are wanting those folks, blaming those people for their for Oscar Mayer leaving, in essence, or their children leaving. And so it's complicated. And I think we need to, those are the areas that the discussion, those deep discussions, need to happen right there at that heart of those issues. Mm-hmm.
As the title of your film suggests, today's Latino immigrants in places like Perry are settling in. They're setting down roots. Are the native-born residents of places like that now just beginning to realize that their new neighbors aren't going to go away, that they're not just a transient population? And is that part of the psychological adjustment that has to be made?
That's an excellent way of phrasing it. I think that is a lot of part of the tensions, is that this community, as was stated, are buying homes, are deciding that this is a place where we're going to live. Perhaps we won't stay in the meatpacking industry all our lives, and certainly some of the areas that they're thinking is moving to other sectors, but we're seeing more and more that immigration to new destinations and old destinations are becoming more of a settled kind of migration, and not the circular patterns of migrant farm workers or of migrant labor for seasonal work, precisely because the industries are asking them to be there year-round. And so... Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that there was no comment in the film from IBP, the meat processing firm in Perry. Why is that? Did you not try to speak with someone from IBP?
Yes, we actually on two occasions had invited IBP to have an interview with us, telling them that this was a educational documentary around the rights of immigrants and focusing on the community of Latinos in Perry, and we were denied an interview on both occasions. So we really wanted to have that perspective and the opportunity to engage them in a conversation about the being the largest employer and so forth. So yes, that was our a great hope of ours, but that didn't turn out. They did give us some of the footage, that the meatpacking footage there, which is their industrial sort of PR footage. Mm-hmm.
Is IBP really responsible for the presence of Latino immigrants in this town?
I would say generally yes. They have certainly drawn this labor force there, and in some cases it has come that people have come because they had a relative working there and they came. But both through the testimonies of the people we talked to in Perry and in other sort of information we've received, they do active recruiting.
In Mexico?
In Mexico and in other parts of the country. In Texas, they have plants in Amarillo and other places where people are asked to come to Iowa to work there if they've had prior work experience in the beef packing industry, even more so because they will not need to be trained and so forth. So yes, there's active recruiting, and because as the gentleman in the film states, the displaced worker, that the wages were at $6.50, and that the community, the Perry Native community, did not want to accept those wages, and so they needed to replace that labor force, and that's how they've done it. So
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now many Americans would ask, if these people have so many problems in the United States, if they're so exploited by their employers, if they're so resented by their neighbors, why are they here? Why do they stay? Don't they have some alternative to this kind of existence?
Well, speaking from purely a human rights perspective first, I mean, I think based on that because someone's conditions are poor, they should just go back to where they come from is a real sort of not the way we need to look at it. But in many cases, people are looking for different alternatives, leaving the industry that they're working in. But often they don't have the option to return to their countries of origin because conditions are truly difficult there, and there aren't any economic opportunities.
I thought that NAFTA was supposed to be the solution.
Right, absolutely not. I mean, as we all, you know, these stories can attest, and many that we all know about, those opportunities do not exist. Not only do they not exist in the agricultural sector, but also we're seeing more and more professionals or people with secondary education also needing to leave because there are no opportunities for work and for economic advancement. So, you know, that kind of question of shouldn't they leave and go back is certainly one that always comes out as a rationale. But I feel that these are members of our communities. They are contributing to the well-being of our society. They are actually allowing our cities, our companies, our industries to run. And so they should be afforded the same labor rights, the same human rights, as all residents in this country, based on that fact and that fact alone, in my opinion. Yeah.
Do they have any alternatives to the kind of existence that they're leading today? Are they going to be, they and their children, are they going to be on the production line at IBP for the rest of their working lives?
Well, I think as history has shown us as well, you know, immigrants who come to this country, and that was the Irish or the Germans or the Polish who worked in the meatpacking industry before, found other opportunities. Some did stay in that industry for a few generations, but in general found other opportunities in other sectors, and I think that certainly is the place. The conditions in the poultry and meatpacking industry are severe, very difficult conditions, and many people need to move on just because of physical reasons, but also are looking
because they've been injured on the job.
Because they've been injured because of low pay, because of physical exhaustion, and because of also not being able to have access to any sort of labor union in cases, or having at least some of their grievances heard, and that forces them more to leave. So, and the opportunities in Iowa, of course, there are some. Outside of the industry, but of the meatpacking industry, but people slowly, after time, find other opportunities, and so I think that is also something that we've seen both in other, not only Iowa, but in other contexts. So,
well, there's a lot more in this film that deserves discussion, but that's all the time we have tonight. Thank you, Yana Shattuck Hernandez, for joining us on UCSD Guestbook. I'm Wayne Cornelius. Thank you and good night.